An industrial-age landscape much different from today saw the skylines filled with soaring brick chimney stalks spewing black reek hundreds of feet into the atmosphere. The design and build of these chimney shafts is usually carried out by specialists who have studied this branch of the trade. A stock-building bricklayer would need to possess a good nerve for heights, considering he'd be scaling ladders with no safety equipment on a daily basis. Industrial chimneys almost always had a square concrete footing, with stone and or brick used in cases where concrete materials weren't feasible. Maybe it was on the site of a brickwork, or maybe near a quarry, so it was easier to get stone or brick instead of getting aggregate and cement for concrete. Courses diminishing in size gave a solid structure. These would have been set out using a radius or a trammel rod. This would obtain an equal radius all round, much like a string line would do, but it's a lot slower because, you would be having to put a bead on just about not every brick, but every time you had a brick set on the radius, you would have to put a bead on it rather than use a trammel rod or a line. Between 1857 and 1859, the three brickies on the Townsend chimney at Port Dundas, Glasgow, were laying on average of 1,200 bricks every day. I'll speak a wee bit more about this chimney later on, but I want to just go over sort of building practices and how they would have built these things first, and then I'm going to go on to talk about some fatalities and some accidents and stuff like that at the end of the video, which was quite interesting. A radius would then proceed to be built to a battered plumb line, like a battered level. But you would leave sort of like an arch section out to be too thin later. Now, too thin, it's like a bricklaying practice. It's used to leave in bonded brickwork. So if you were going to be building in at a later date, like if you were going to be building in like this, you would tooth in so you could be bonding back in, and it would all just continue back in as if it had never been there in the past. Now, the purpose of leaving this section out is so that you could get access to the inside, because the job would have been scaffolded from the inside. You would have left like a gap in the middle of the boards. You would have strung like a crane or a pulley system that would go straight up through the boards, and you could be loading out just basically from the winch or from your pulley system. So the brickies themselves would have left out the sort of internal clay fire brick to allow for putholes, or literally put holes to put in like wooden beams and planks to form a working deck or a scaffold with a gap in the middle. So basically, what we're looking at here, on average, is probably three brickies per chimney. You'll have probably two labourers on the ground. You'll have at least one or two labourers up on the scaffold loading out and taking bricks off and taking off compo or muck, whatever you want to call it. The brickies would have probably been working on the head of the chimney. So you're working overhand, so you're working sort of over yourself with an internal scaffold, not external scaffold round about this chimney. So you're basically up there, there's nothing below you, and you're working over with your trowel and a bead and pointing over yourself. And so as they got to about 5 foot in height roughly, they would be leaving holes for a new lift in the scaffold. And the further up the stack they got, they would sort of leapfrog the scaffolds over each other, stripping and rebuilding as they went. So basically, underneath them, there could be a couple of, at any time, there could be a couple of 100 feet of nothing underneath you. So I'm going to say that a worker, maybe has been in the Navy in the past, maybe is a steeplejack trained as a bricky, maybe is a bricky trained as a steeplejack, but a worker trained in the use of a bosun's chair would have probably descended to fill in the firebrick and clay sort of holes and install staple shaped hand and foot holds to act as a ladder so that the brickies could access the top lift every morning. A lot of the chimneys in the south of England, and well, just most of England to be honest, were made out of stocks or flettings, fletting bricks or stocks. But in Scotland, they were built from common bricks. Now, it's a wee bit easier for me to talk about common bricks because I work with common bricks quite regularly. And the vast majority of chimneys round about me or large chimneys are built from common bricks. Common brick are produced from common clay, which is sort of unwashed or unprepared. Sometimes these bricks come from collieries, but they're sort of a byproduct of mining. So you usually find that where the brick is stamped, there's usually like been a mine or a quarry nearby where they've been pulling stuff out of the ground and they've just used this as a byproduct. And they make, just by chance, make really, really good bricks, hard bricks. A couple of examples here. You have the White Hill brick, which was a colliery in Rosewell, Midlothian, and they had a big brickworks. This is New Battle bricks and Roslyn bricks, and these came from collieries in Newton Grange and in Roslyn. Tall chimneys should and would not have been built in cement, because a good quality lime mortar should have been used to allow for a bit of sway. Lime is hydraulic and in nature, and it doesn't crack as much as cement, so if you'd built that in cement, it would probably crack. There's an instance a chimney in a book that I'm researching at the moment for this video, we'll maybe go over it a wee bit later, where the cement pointing cracked and the chimney gave way. So it's a sort of trial and error thing with some of these chimneys, as you'll find when I go over some of the accidents in a bit. Now, stone, concrete or brick copings were used, sometimes fire clay. In the Port Dundas chimney in the chemical works in Glasgow, they had fire clay copings, which they also used iron shavings in the mortar, and subsequently the chimney was hit by lightning. Now, when the chimney was hit by lightning, the coping fell 450 feet to the ground and was undamaged as it hit the ground. So this chimney coping must have been solid, but I'm wondering if the iron and the pointing mix led to the chimney being struck by lightning. Now, that would have been for the external part of the chimney. So you would have an external leaf of bricks, common brick, and then you would have a couple of inches as a cavity, and then internally you would have a good sort of hard fire clay brick. Now, the process of laying these was slightly different. These would be dipped in a layer, like a very thin layer of clay, covered and dipped, and then sort of laid on the bed without any beds of cement on the internal, so that it was a sort of one material fire sort of lining all the way up the chimney. These would then be tapped in with a brick hammer, so they were laid really, really tight. Now, every single external brick, so the common brick, they would be laid, they would be dipped in water before they were laid. Honestly, this, working with cement, working with clay, and working with bricks and tools, and the sort of drying of the wind and all these sort of stuff, if you're in the summer, your hands would get absolutely destroyed. So, these guys, they must have cuts galore on their hands, honestly. And these boys were fucking hardcore, like, no scared of heights, plenty, like I said, they were sometimes laying 400 brick each a day on the radius without a line, which is, that's decent going, like. So one of the sources that I've used here is the Tall Chimney Construction, a practical treatise on the construction of tall chimney shafts in brick, stone, iron and concrete. is a book from 1885 by Robert and Francis Bancroft. It gives some details or detailed examples of existing chimney shafts. They'd be non-existent now because most of them have been knocked down. But I've used this, and I've also used the modern bricklayer, which is another older book. If you want to know about that, let me know in the comments, and I'll let you know which other books and sources that I've used. I've used stuff online, and I've used a couple of books. But I'm going to go through the Townsend's chimney in Port Dundas, Glasgow. It was the tallest chimney in the world when it was built, and it's the most in-depth example of any of the shafts in this book. So I'm going to go through some of the things, and what it does is it gives you a sort of, this is a decent sized chimney, so it gives you a sort of idea of scale when I've been talking about these chimneys, and a wee bit of ideas into the technical stuff. So we'll go into the batter, the types of bricks, amounts of bricks, the bricklayer's time, mortar, and stuff like that. So stay tuned for the next couple of minutes, and I'll go over the boring stuff. After that, I would like to go into fatalities and accidents and chimneys being damaged or falling down. It's explained that chimneys should be built in the summer months, so a sort of building campaign over the course of the year. Typically 8 months or so, something like that, especially in Scotland. So the Townsend chimney, Port Dundas, Glasgow, was designed and built by Mr. Robert Corbett of Belfield Terrace. He actually comes up later on in this book, designing and building another chimney. So Belfield Terrace, Duke Street in Glasgow, for a Mr. Joseph Townsend of Crawford Street Chemical Works, Port Dundas. So the dimensions of the total height from bottom of foundation to top of coping was 468 feet. And the height from ground line to the top of coping was 454 feet, making it the tallest chimney in the world at this time. These were built to sections of 30 feet in height, 40 feet in height, 52 feet in height, 22 feet in height, the varying numbers of 30 feet, 40 feet, 52 feet. Now, they would have been plumbed as they went up, and the batter would have sort of been set, and these would have been built in sections and checked as they went. They would have been built in about 2.5 feet per day up the way. And so a Robert Corbett, so it took him and two other brickies, it took him 3 years working 316 days at 10 hours each in 1857, 431 and a half days in 58, and 423 and a half in 1859. That is a total of 1,171 days. It gave them an average of 1,200 bricks a day. That's a total of 1.2 million bricks. The bricks were made of a good clay ground with 10% good clinkers. That means they're just sort of 10% good, really hard bricks. I don't know what the purpose of that is, to be honest. But the chimney is to be, this chimney was built entirely of bricks, foundation to cope, and it was 5'7" thick at the base. That's not including the internal firewall. That's just the external common brick wall on the outside. So they would have been put in, so as they got every sort of like 25 feet, they were installing these hoop iron bands and basically built in edgeways in the brickwork every 25 feet, 9 inches for the surface. And that was just to sort of bond and keep a different sort of tie-in, different for having bricks. So there's iron in these things as well. Quite a lot. They were always experimenting quite a lot this sort of, at this period in time. So now we find the lime mix here. The lime is a 3:1, which is 3 sand and 1 lime. It should be good Irish lime, well burnt. 3 sharp sand. Now, added into this is a portion of fine red oxide of iron. I don't know if this was to do with making it just an aesthetic thing. I think there was a bit of a plasticity issue here, where I maybe try to add a bit of plasticizer into the mix. I don't think Lime needs it too much. And also, it's obviously for strength. But as I said earlier in the video, this chimney was hit by lightning. I wonder if there's so much iron in the chimney, and obviously no lightning conductor, it's obviously going to get hit with lightning. The coping stone was formed of Garnkirk fire clay, purposely made about 9 inches wide and 3 inches thick, flanged over the wall of the chimney. It was jointed in OPC, so it was jointed in cement. These are the ones that were struck by lightning, and they were certainly undamaged when they were at the base of the stack. The chimney was actually constructed by Dayworks. They were unsure of what height it would carry. It actually carried it higher than what they had decided in the first place. They reckon that the full cost of the chimney and the cone was round about $8,000. And now there's a few instances in this book a chimney's sort of been blown off the plumb by wind. This is done by a process of sawing, which basically saws the bed out of the way and replacing some bricks. If you want me to go into a bit of a more technical, detailed video, and you got this far, let me know. I might try and do one of them in the future. But you can actually straighten these massive chimneys, and it took me a while to get my head around it, but it's quite amazing how they done it, especially back then. On Thursday afternoon, on October the 2nd, 1873... a chimney on a cement works in North Fleet near Gravesend in London. It was basically, it collapsed because it was built for cement. It probably was too strong for the chimney. It states here that the shaft being virtually finished, Messrs. Gosling attended to witness the laying of the last brick. At about 1 o'clock, when the workmen were about to ascend, one man having actually reached the top, the upper part of the shaft was observed to bulge outwardly, and immediately afterwards, about 60 feet of the top fell both outside and inside the chimney, resulting in the death of 6 and injury of 8 men. That would have been carnage, basically. On the Newlands Mill chimney in Bradford, 3 years after the completion of this chimney, it was found to be cracked and broken on the opposite side to the cuts. This was repaired. In 1872, 10 years after it was built, further cracks were noticed and then repaired. Now in 1882, the tenants of the mill became uneasy about further indications of cracking, so they basically just told them it was going to collapse. Basically they took out the bulges, repaired the outer casing. This basically failed. And on the 26th of December, small portions of the outer casing started to fall. And on the 27th, a large piece fell, breaking down the scaffold used for the repairs. On the night of the 27th, the wind blew half a gale, or about 16 pounds per foot. And the following morning, on the 28th of December, more of the outer casing fell, and at a few minutes past 8 a.m, the chimney began to settle, bursting out stones and lime near where the chimney had been cut. This continued for a few seconds, then the upper portion of the chimney fell in a southeasterly direction, killing 54 people, destroying property estimated at £20,000. Thanks a lot for watching. Now, if you've got this far, it makes a huge difference if you sort of like, subscribe, and all that sort of stuff. So, there's only so much I can fit into sort of these videos. I'd like them to be a bit more in depth, but I have to sort of pick and choose what I leave in and leave out, or ultimately it'd just be too long, and I've not got the sort of facilities to do these long videos. This is just done off a phone. So yeah, let me know what you think, and if there's anything else, because this was a suggestion in the past. So if there's anything else you'd like to see, a stonemason's view of, and my sort of general opinion, let me know in the comments. and thanks for watching. Bye.